First thing I'm going to talk about today is a little bit of Flying Sparks project, and then I'll talk a little bit about challenges that we've dealt with in the project. And here's Connie Kohler, and she's kind of like the brains behind Flying Sparks. She's the PI on the project. The Flying Sparks project is a 20 community intervention based on community-based participatory research approach. And it's administered through the University of Alabama at Birmingham, UAB, and its primary aim is to explore the determinants of community adoption, ownership, and enhancement of a community health advisor, or CHA, intervention strategy in Alabama's rural Black Belt region. And the Black Belt region in the U.S. consists of about 200 fairly contiguous counties from Texas, basically, to past Virginia. And it's kind of like a crescent shape. And according to Booker T. Washington, the meaning of the term Black Belt has evolved a little bit over time. It was first used to designate a part of the country which was distinguished by the color of the soil. The part of the country that possessed this thick, dark, and naturally rich soil was, of course, part of the South, where the slaves were most profitable. And consequently, they were taken there in the largest numbers. Later, and especially since the Civil War, the term seems to be used in more of a political sense. So, and that is to designate counties where the number of Black people outnumber white people. So that's what generally the whole history of the Black Belt thing. Alabama's Black Belt region runs generally across the southwestern part of the state and includes some of the poorest counties in the U.S. Almost 50% of the adults and children in the region live below the federal poverty level, and medium income is about $18,000. Mortality from diabetes exceeds the rest of Alabama by about 22%, heart disease by about 12%, stroke by about 9%, and Alabama as a state exceeds the country by about 25%. So we're dealing with the poorest of the poor, basically. Well, the Flying Sparks program is essentially designed to examine the role of social capital in community health promotion campaigns. In short, 20 communities were identified. We ranked them in terms of their levels of social capital, and community health advisors were trained in each community, and we're now documenting the levels of activity of the CHAs in the communities to see if the communities with higher levels of social capital utilize the CHAs and the toolkits we gave them more or differently than the communities with lower levels of social capital. Now, the project is now in its fourth of year four of five, and it depends fairly heavily on a community participatory board, CPB. With the help and guidance of the CPB, Flying Sparks was able to recruit and train individuals who would implement these CHA training activities. We're also able to identify and train local residents as interviewers, and then collect about 1,400 interviews from people in the community regarding this general health and social capital. So what are some of the lessons we learned in executing this project? Well, I'm going to organize this part around some challenges that Meredith Minkler identified with respect to implementing CPBR, or CBPR. Minkler has done a lot of community-based research over the years and is an important figure and well-known advocate in this area. Minkler identified a few challenges you're often confronted with when you're doing or hoping to do community research. And the first challenge is what she considers community-driven issue selection. And one of the goals of CBPR, and it might be the ultimate goal, is community empowerment. That means giving the community power to set the agendas and plan the research. And it means ensuring that the research project comes from and is driven by the community. That it's of, by, and for the community. And this can happen if there are existing agencies or community groups in the community, like Boys and Girls Club and NGOs. Or it might happen if you've got an established CPB or community participatory board in a community. These two groups can reach out to universities, foundations, or other partners, ask them to help identify or study these important issues. But many times the line between what's really community-driven or community-initiated isn't crystal clear. A lot of times it's the researcher who initiates contact with community members and groups. An issue or project might be identified because funds are available to do something on that issue or project. And it might be the researcher who recognizes that these funds are available and sees an opportunity for collaboration. And Minkler acknowledges this as well and says, that's really what's paradoxical about the community-driven issue challenge. Projects often won't occur without the initiative of someone outside a community who has the time, skill, and commitment to get a grant funded or create a plan addressing some issue or need. So research can help members of the community get together and then think through the issues and discuss the pros and cons of different projects. Community members can refine the issues, ideas, and strategies. So the issues can still be driven by the community in a sense, or to varying degrees, but they don't necessarily have to initiate the process. With respect to the Flying Sparks Project, we've been doing some research in two counties in southern Alabama for several years, and we thought we could apply for some money to expand our research presence in the area. We met with the existing CPB, asked them to expand a bit to make it more representative, maybe seven counties, and then it consulted the new and expanded CPB regarding the implementation of this community-based research in the community-wide health information campaign. So the CPB actually determined the communities that we would target. They identified community contacts for us, and they suggested certain activities that we should promote or sponsor regarding the community participation. So they essentially drove the project, even though they didn't initiate it. And that's how the challenge was met with Flying Sparks. It's essentially a collaboration. Again, we initiated things, and they developed the programs, and we began executing it with the help of community residents. The second challenge Minkler refers to is concerns insider-outsider tensions. And what she's mainly referring to here is tensions associated with power dynamics between groups and misunderstandings concerning levels of involvement or incentives. There are actually several sources of tension that might exist here, and some are more applicable to Flying Sparks than others. One potential source of tension regards community knowledge and community welfare. And by community, I mean there could be tension over what is truly good for the community in both the short term and the long term. Obviously, reasonable people can disagree on these things, and everyone thinks they're reasonable. And most researchers doing community health projects really don't want to harm the community, at least that's not their intent. Nonetheless, who knows what or why or who, these can all be sources of tension. Do you think community members know everything about their community? Are the short-term and long-term views of all members the same? And are their views always consistent, practical, or realistic? Community members may not know everything about the community's history or issues or community politics, or about the resources that might be available even within the community. And what if there's a lot of instability in the community or a lot of turnover in the community? And that's often the case, or sometimes the case, in low-income areas. Who do you ask? The people who just got there or the people who lived there forever? That's one of the problems with community research. The natures of communities can change over time. The point here is that although community members clearly know a lot about their communities, so do outsiders and researchers sometimes. And knowledge and insight from both insiders and outsiders can complement and supplement each other. An outsider's perspective is often required, or else you get the same old, same old. Right? And sometimes there are problems with letting insiders reform. So don't be naive when you conduct CPBR. You should probably avoid relying solely on the community for knowledge. Know a little bit, or at least something before you get involved. You're the researcher after all. And believe it or not, though, some researchers can be pretty arrogant. But community members can be just as arrogant too sometimes. And both can overestimate their knowledge and importance sometimes. In our case, CPB people were just terrific. Another source of tension can be concern over research in general. It's a tension based on a lack of knowledge, and that's certainly understandable, right? Many are wary of quantitative research. They're skeptical of statistics. And people are, everybody's a little bit apprehensive about the unknown. So you just have to explain statistics. You have to explain why you need specific numbers for things. And you have to do it in an understandable way that makes sense. It's absolutely the case with the people that we worked with, our interviewers. I don't care if it takes an hour or a week. You spend whatever time is needed to explain who you're sampling, why you're sampling, how you're going to look at the data, why you're going to look at the data, and things like that. And I think people have an innate desire to learn things. But this concern also has an upside. Community people often have valuable suggestions about how to word things. If you're talking about diabetes, use the word sugar instead or something like that. So even the experts can learn a lot from non-experts. Another source of tension is probably related to trust in the community to begin with, and there's a lot of research on trust and the correlates of trust. Where does it ultimately come from? What drives it? Is it biological? Is it attitudinal? Is it consequences of our attribution style? Can it be even measured at a community level, or is it an individualized concept? Is there such a thing as community trust, or is it all at the individual level? Anyhow, there's a lot of research on trust out there, and I'm not sure there are any definitive answers. So let's just say that there's always going to be some tension regarding trust in the community. Another thing, tension could be money. Not a whole lot needs to be said about money. Right? Money can be the cause and the cure of a lot of tension in community research. My advice is just don't talk about money a whole lot if you can avoid it. I got this $3 million grant or whatever. Well, you know, you don't have to bring that up necessarily. Because then everybody wanting in, if they don't know the details of the budget, you can get yourself into trouble. Another source of tension can be, and we touched on a little bit, tension occur within community between various agencies and individuals with different political, economic, or social agendas. You know, different agencies have different agendas. Maybe the ultimate goal of an organization is to maintain its autonomy. If so, then agencies want to run things their way. Is it any wonder, then, if you look closely at these activities, that you see so many differences when you get, and you get turf wars between these good-hearted agencies? And, you know, everybody wants to help, but sometimes it could be kind of like a tragedy of the commons situation. The last possible tension I want to say something about is concerns tension among community staff and community members. Sometimes workers can be alienated from their community because of their collaboration with us, or collaboration with researchers. And some residents may get a little jealous and think the staff is, they're acting too uppity or whatever. And maybe they are. But maybe there's some type of hazing, for lack of a better word, going on as well. And you got to be sensitive to this possibility. You run into jealousy and misunderstanding and ignorance anywhere. So one thing we do is, you know, you got to be open and transparent. Another thing we learn to do is you got to be able to keep your word. If you make a mistake, you eat it. You know, don't penalize others for people's mistakes that you make. Another thing, you should spend time in the community also. You know, actions speak louder than words. You don't want to be pen pals. You want to be connected with a face. Do the little things that people, so people don't think you're above those things. Do what you're asking others to do and show them what you're doing. Help establish the norms, help set the tone. The importance of having the ability or perceived credibility of being able to genuinely empathize and relate can't be overstated. So you got to be out in the community. The big wigs have to be out in the communities. Some constraints on community involvement. Well, getting people to participate is tough, right? And people who are really the worst off probably aren't going to be your volunteers or your community leaders a lot of times. And that's why a lot of people criticize CBPR. They say it just reinforces and maintains the status quo. Well, grassroots can mean different things to different people. Now, a lot of people consider, again, the CBPR to be based on existing power structure within a community. And so we meet with agency heads or religious leaders. How can you be sure that they aren't simply the poverty pimps? Or how do you know exactly that they represent the people in the community? You have to go out there and, you know, beat the streets sometimes and actually talk to people. Make sure that the leaders that you're talking to or you're dealing with actually do represent the people. There's also a little bit of constraint for time. A lot of researchers get upset with community people because they don't have enough time to devote to this program or this problem. Well, you know, you have to, planning is important, reminding is important, and you expect things to come up sometimes, like a funeral or transportation problem, illnesses. You know, why don't a lot of these communities, why don't people have the time? Well, most of them have lives, right? And most actually have the time, but things come up that are more important than your research project. Right? As a researcher, you have to understand that you might not be the most important person in their lives. And a lot of people you work with might have a child with transportation issues, either with respect to their own family or a vehicle or a friend's families or relatives. But these can disrupt work patterns. Another thing you have to be aware of, when you hire a lot of people, start a small number and build. Rather than just hiring for hiring's sake, start small and build. It's a lot in the long run, if you have to let people go, that, you know, can cause political damage in the down the road. So start small and build. Dilemmas regarding findings. The last one, dilemmas regarding sharing and release of findings. You know, community members should play a role in determining how the data will be used. And Minkler suggests that as well. But the issue here is how you deal with unflattering results. And maybe you'll never have to deal with that. But if you do, do we have a duty to report all findings, even those that might be controversial or do harm to the community? Well, Minkler argues that we can neglect those results sometimes if we want to. Ultimately, it's going to be up to you as a researcher to decide. We have presented preliminary results to the CPB board where, hey, you know, I thought they were pretty good. People are generally healthy, and access doesn't seem to be a problem in these communities with our sample. And one of the members was a nurse and said, well, you know, I deal with sick people. Who are you talking to? And, well, you don't want to overreact and say, okay, well, we aren't going to report that finding then, because you never know who, you know, you just don't want to overreact as well. But you want to talk to everybody individually and discuss the findings, how you're going to report it, and what actually is at stake. Thanks for your time.